Set your course for the Huff
Takes Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Hoth Takes. I'm Grace Seegers.
I'm Haley Bird Welt.
And I'm Eric Geller.
So today we're doing something a little bit different, where we are going to have Eric kind of be our topic of conversation. We're just going to spend the next 45 minutes or so mercilessly roasting him.
Uh-oh. You know, what did I sign up for?
Just kidding, mostly. We are actually going to be talking about a really cool experience that Eric had a couple of weeks ago. He got to go to what I have been referring to as Star Wars Hotel. I think it's actually called Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser. And it just seems like it was an amazing experience. Eric had a whole Twitter thread about it. But Haley and I, being very excited about everything that happened and having pressing questions about pretty much everything involved, especially whether there was space bread, which, as longtime Hoth Takes fans know, is a really important question for Haley. So I guess just to get this started, Eric, could you tell us a little bit about why you were there or what this is and just a general overview of your trip?
Yeah, so honestly, it was really just a long delayed vacation and finally found the right opportunity to take it. I had been discussing this with two of my friends who are huge Disney fans ever since they announced the Star Wars Hotel and their annual pass holders, so they got a chance to book the Galactic Star Cruiser trip on the early side, which means we were able to go on, I think, the third weekend that it was operating. And honestly, yeah, it was really just an incredible Star Wars journey. 2 days, two nights of nonstop Star Wars immersion. The first sort of real pure vacation that I had taken since the pandemic. And, you know, we'll talk about the cost of this vacation later on, but I had sort of saved up for this since I saw the announcement, and I knew that this was going to be expensive. So I started putting aside money that I could sort of dedicate to what I knew was going to be an extravagant splurge experience. And yes, it was indeed pretty expensive. But having saved up, I felt like I was not, you know, dipping into my savings or anything like that. And it was incredible. I mean, you know, I sort of said this on Twitter, but Disney does a really great job of drawing you in, making you feel like you're actually living out the story. It's not, I kind of went into it thinking that it might be a little bit hokey and that the cracks would show and, you know, it would sort of be, you know, something for 10-year-olds. But then for folks like me, we would be sitting there going, okay, this is a little bit weird. And honestly, I didn't feel that, which I think is probably the best way that I can think to praise this experience, is that it does not make you feel that way. You genuinely do get drawn in and you feel like you're part of something cool. So that's kind of my top level thought there.
And where is a Star Wars Hotel other than a galaxy far, far away?
So it's interesting. It's actually right next to the Galaxy's Edge part of Disney's Hollywood Studios in Orlando, Florida. So they actually built a separate entrance for people who are doing the Star Wars Hotel thing, because part of the experience is you have like a shore excursion to Batuu. And so they sort of basically bus you over into Hollywood Studios through this special entrance that takes you directly into Galaxy's Edge. You don't do any of the like security or anything like that. So yeah, it's basically right behind Hollywood Studios, just off the highway.
Eric, we were in Florida at the same time.
Oh my gosh,
that's
really?
Very exciting. Yeah, I was like several hundred miles away, but we were technically in the same state. So that's, I mean, usually we're in the same city, so that's not really as exciting, I guess.
Yeah, we were actually further away than we probably have been in a long time, except for, like, I don't know, the occasional weekend out of town.
So I just have one more question and one more setup question, and then we'll turn the reins over to Haley for a little bit. But could you kind of tell us a little bit about sort of the setup of the experience? So Were you just staying in a hotel, or you mentioned a day trip excursion that you guys did? So what was your daily life like in Star Wars world?
Yeah, so basically you get to this like slab gray terminal building, and which is like the departure terminal. You go through security, you watch a little video that basically says, here's the difference between a real emergency and like a fake, like in-story emergency. So here's when to actually get worried, and here's when to get ready to have some fun, essentially. And then you get on a shuttle pod that takes you up to the Star Cruiser, which is just an elevator that has been, you know, themed out to make it look like, you know, there's like windows where you can see space, you can see the ship getting closer and all that stuff. So then you're in the atrium of the hotel, and, you know, there's places that you can explore right away. They take you to your cabin. You can go on like the ship orientation tour. But essentially, you are in this building for the next 2 days, with the exception of however many hours you want to spend on Batuu on your second day, which is the only full day. So it's basically you check in at like 1 p.m. on day one. You have all of day two. You check out in the morning on day three. So day two is when you have that excursion. With the exception of several hours on Batuu, you are in this building the entire time, and it is meant to look like a spaceship. They have viewports with computer screens making it look like space instead of windows. There's obviously no windows. There's one room where if you I thought this was very smart. They built a room called the Climate Simulator, which is designed to mimic the environment of whatever planet you're going to be visiting on your journey. Obviously, we were visiting Batuu, which means this is just a room simulating the climate of Florida, which means it's Florida. It's a room with a view of the outside world and plants, and there's sunlight coming in. It's basically the place to go if you're feeling claustrophobic. It's the only room on the quote-unquote spaceship where you can see the outside world. And so that is, and that was a lot of fun to go there and you know, so you're sort of pretending like you're in this high-tech space, but really you're just soaking up some sun and getting a little peace and tranquility. So anyway, that's the overview, is you're on the ship the entire time, except for this shore excursion. They, you know, as I said, with the shuttle pod that takes you onto the ship in the first place, when you go to and from Galaxy's Edge, they have you in this, it's actually like a box truck, but if you get into the story, it is a transport shuttle, and they sort of deck it out on the inside to make you feel like you're still part of the story. So there's no moment where you like have to exit the story for a moment and then get back into it. It's like wall to wall, like you are inside of the story.
So I know Haley has the critical question here that we're all really wondering. So Haley, take it away.
So first of all, I want to say, I went to space camp as a kid, and that was a very formative experience. And this, like, looking at the photos you posted reminds me of space camp. And I think it's very fun that, like, adults can do this kind of, like, imagination, you know, fun experience that you don't really get often. Mm-hmm. But I was curious about the food, first of all. Listeners of this podcast will know that I think about the bread from The Force Awakens on a daily basis that Rey makes, one quarter portion. Was there any space bread? What was your favorite dish that you ate? Did it taste, did it seem like space food, or was it simply food?
So I will say this. The food was not the high point.
Not going for the food.
You're not going for the food. It's tough, right? I mean, I'll start with the space bread. So there was no Jakku-style inflatable space bread, as much as I wish. I think the Imagineers are still working on that one. That, if they can make that work, I'll go back. I'll pay again for this experience. there was not that kind of space bread. The food is always going to be, I think, the trickiest part of something like this, because they can make the coolest costumes and animatronic alien suits and mask, and they had an animatronic Rodian character there with the snout, you know, actually articulated and moving and all that stuff. So that was pretty cool. And then they could do all kinds of special effects with the windows, and obviously they can write the coolest story. The one thing they can never do is create actual alien food, because it's not, we don't live in that world where that kind of stuff actually exists. So they're limited in terms of the palette of the experiences that they can create. Right now, obviously, you know, chefs all over the world are constantly coming up with new ways to make the existing ingredients of Earth taste different, but it's all still the ingredients of Earth. So the food looked really cool. You've probably seen pictures of the blue shrimp, which was served on the second night. It's just shrimp. I mean, it looks cool. It's definitely the thing that people are going to be posting pictures of because it is, again, that kind of attention-grabbing thing. It's just shrimp. And honestly, like, there was no dish where I was like, oh my God, like, wow, like, Disney really figured this out. And, like, they really figured out a way to take Earth ingredients and make me feel like I was eating something I'd never eaten before. The one thing that I thought they'd be able to do it with was they have, like, grilled cheese, but it's not grilled cheese. It's, like, this bubble waffle thing.
What?
And so it's, like...
You need to describe this a little. What is a bubble waffle?
It's, like, a piece of dough with, like, bubbly sort of... So a waffle has, like, those square indentations.
Yeah.
So yes, a bubble waffle thing...
We're familiar.
Okay, well, listen, I wanted to start from zero.
I've heard of those before.
When you come back from Galactic Star Cruiser, you never know who knows what back on Earth. Anyway, instead of those square depressions, it is like circular, like, bubbles that are popping up from the dough from the batter or whatever. I don't know, like, what they use. But anyway, and it's all, like, cheese. Like, it's like...
That's pretty dope.
But here's the thing. It's not, like, gooey. Like, it's not like, it wasn't, like, it had clearly been cooked, but when we ate it, it wasn't, like, warm and gooey. It was, like, sort of kind of warm.
Was it crispy?
It was not really crispy either, as I recall.
They failed the texture there.
I mean, you had one job. Make a grilled cheese, but make it different from a regular Earth grilled cheese. And so they didn't, I actually remember, like, one of the reviews that I read ahead of time was like, oh yeah, this was nothing like what we were expecting based on the photos. Because this was one of the things that they served to the press. I think last year they did a very early press walkthrough when they were still designing the entire experience. And they had some food, and the bubble waffle was the thing where people were like, they showed pictures. I don't know if they got a chance to eat it last year, but there was buzz around this because it was kind of like cool looking. You could tell what it was supposed to be, but it just looked different.
I've got it up on the internet.
It looks cool, right? It looks like the kind of thing where if that were gooey and like crispy, it would be a delight. And it wasn't. It was disappointing. I like to think of myself as a foodie when I find like cool new food. That's like a cool thing for me, but I'm also not somebody who, like, I would say that I eat to live rather than living to eat. And so the fact that the food was not very stellar was not the hugest like detraction from my experience, but it is definitely a selling point that they advertise as like, we have come up with new and interesting ways to eat and drink in space. And I just don't think it delivers. And I think part of that is, as I said, you can't really trick your taste buds and your smell receptors the same way I think you can trick your visual and auditory sensors to believe that you're experiencing something that you're not. So, like, you bite into, like, chocolate mousse or, like, a fruit mousse, which they had, like, 40 of those on this thing. And you know what you're eating, right? Because you've had that before. You can't, like, the label says it's from this planet or it's made with this ingredient or whatever. But, like, I think it's harder to suspend your disbelief when it comes to taste and scent than it is sight and sound. And I think that that is part of why it's always going to be tricky to do fake space food. But I don't think that they did the best job.
Well, so here's my question. Setting aside the expectation that it tastes different and, like, it's from a different galaxy, was there anything that you enjoyed over the rest of the dishes?
Yeah, I mean, they had, like, some good desserts, I would say, even the, like, the mousse-type stuff. It was good. They had, like, the shrimp was good. Like, a lot, it was all, like, prepared very well. They had steak that was good. I don't know if it would technically fillet, but, like, they had like short ribs, flatbreads, a lot of stuff that, again, I don't have the most refined elite palate, so I'm not the kind of person that you want to go to for the like top level, like, but really how expert level was this prepared? Like, it tasted fine. Like, it was good. Like, it was objectively like good food. I never felt like I was being cheated out of like a high quality dining experience. I think the story element is the part where it's like, okay, this was a high bar to clear, but they did not clear it.
Yeah,
right.
That makes sense.
So first I must make a reference before my next question that will be really appreciated by people who grew up in the New York City area in the 1990s and 2000s.
So most of the people on Twitter who might come across this podcast.
Indeed, indeed. So when I was little, in New York, there was this restaurant called Mars 2112. And the whole gimmick was that it was this restaurant on Mars, and it was so expensive and the food was really mediocre, but you went for the ambiance. And part of it was the elevator to the restaurant, which was an elevator like a spaceship, and it had a screen. It would move around, like that elevator that you described. And then there were all of these alien actors, and it was, you know, made to look like Mars. Right before it closed down, like in the early 2000s, it had started looking pretty shabby. But this to me sounds like the super cool high budget version of Mars 2112. And I think that's absolutely dope. And, also is a sort of segue into my next question for you. So part of Mars 2112 were the alien actors, who, you know, were just people wearing silly suits, and not really doing much other than occasionally dancing around. But looking at your Twitter thread, it seems like part of the immersive experience that you had were the actors and sort of the storyline that you were part of. So could you tell us a little bit about that as well?
Oh, absolutely. So first of all, I desperately wish I could have gone to Mars 2112. This sounds incredible. And I also would guess that, especially as you get older, the shabbiness becomes part of the charm, the idea that it's this institution that has endured for so long. So anyway, that's a side note, but that sounds incredibly fun. Yeah, the performers were incredible. They were top-notch. I mean, when I was chatting with somebody who works at Disney, and they basically said the cast members, which is the Disney term for employees, on the Star Cruiser are like the cream of the crop. Like, they are the elite of the, like, the group of people who work at Disney. And it showed. I mean, so there's two things. There are the actors who are playing, like, quote-unquote characters, right? So, like, the cruise director, the captain, the first order officer, the mechanic, etc., you know. Then there are the employees who are, like, I guess, quote-unquote playing crew members of the ship. So, like, your server at dinner, the bartender, they have their own backstories, just like people at Galaxy's Edge, but they're not, like, these sort of top, like, marquee names that you're going to, like, see walking around, and they're at the center of the story. They're sort of more in the background. But they were incredible, too. So Disney really tried, my understanding is that they wanted to make this as much like a luxury cruise experience as they could within certain parameters. So part of that is just, like, you know, it's like, you know, service, right? It's, you know, personalized service, you know, making the guest feel like the people working there really care about getting things right for them. So, you know, that could be small touches like the second night at dinner, our server, you know, who as on most cruises, it's the same server, you know, has seated you in the same spot. And our server, who was phenomenal, had already, you know, had our drinks at the table when we got there because they had written down what we ordered the night before. And it just kind of skipped that step of ordering them again and made it feel like, okay, they're actually like going out of their way to make that little element work for us. And that was a nice touch. And then there's also the way that they get into the story too. So at the end of our first night of dinner, you know, we have been chatting with our server, and, you know, I guess a general comment I will make about this, if anybody's thinking about going, the best way you can have this experience is if you really lean hard into the story. If you are, like, fully there to role play and, like, get into this experience, everybody else who's there in terms of the employees is going to give you that back 150%. So, you know, we had been talking to our server and just, you know, asking him, like, what planet is he from? And, you know, how long has he been working on the ship? And of course, he had all of the answers in his head already. He'd worked all the backstory. And at the end of the meal, he comes over to me and he kind of slips me this piece of paper and he says, you know, the I forget like who he said, like the cruise director or somebody like wanted me to give you this. And it was a fragment of a message that we needed to get the rest of the message to figure out. Basically, we were being given this mission. So we left the dining room and we eventually found these other people who were very conspicuously standing around puzzling over these scraps of paper. And we put them together and it had basically instructions for something that we needed to do the next day on Batuu, which involves the Millennium Falcon Smuggler's Run ride. So it was a way of connecting, you know, this scheduled experience of, you know, it's dinner. You're all going to have dinner. But some people get this note that brings them further into the story by having them go seek out these other passengers. And then that sort of leads into this activity that they do the next day at the park. And it was, again, a lot of this stuff, if you're not kind of like experiencing it, it sounds like these little touches, but when you add them all up, it's like this connective tissue that makes you feel like you're not like, now I'm sitting in this building and now I'm going to take a bus to a theme park. Like when all this is sort of coming at you all at once, it actually feels like a real trip that you're taking, like a seamless experience that you're having, because everybody knows, I mean, it's to some degree scripted. So everybody knows the parts they have to play to get you to the next step. And because they know what they need to do, they're really good at linking everything together so that you actually feel like you are just stumbling upon these experiences. And again, if you step back, you know that it's planned, but the way that they make you feel like it's spontaneous is just really impressive. So there's 100 things I could say about the cast members. I want to especially call out the performances of Sammy the mechanic and Lieutenant Croy, the First Order officer. I think Lieutenant Croy is my favorite, and I suspect this is going to be true for a lot of people who do this, because unlike everybody else who's like essentially the good guys, he, you know, the actor who plays him goes into this knowing that he is going to be reviled, people are going to be booing him, they're going to be trying to trick him, they're going to be taunting him, and he is so good about leaning into that and playing off of that energy in the same way that in the, like, picture Hux, not like, he's not exactly Hux, but in the same way that Hux, like, get sort of responds to, like, resistance defiance with this kind of, like, huffy kind of pride and contempt. The actor who's playing this officer is so good at that. And it's, again, it's just, like, impressive how well all of them are able to respond to what the guests are doing, because to some extent they can't predict what I'm going to do, right? They're all driving toward this story outcome, but they don't know exactly how I'm going to play into that. You could have disruptive kids who are constantly tugging on the officer's, you know, shirt and like want to tell him something interesting, and we did see some of that. You could have like overeager adults who are trying to sort of muscle out the kids. We didn't see that, but I'm sure that has happened. And the actors have to be able to respond to all of that. And they can't break character, you know? They have to incorporate it into the story that they're telling. And they really got a great group of people because it worked. It really was very funny.
So it seems like from everything that you are saying, one of my questions on this little doc of show notes is, was it worth it? And it seems like you are saying, yes, it's very much worth it.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the question that every review put at the end as like, this is what we know people want to know. And everybody kind of came to the same conclusion I did, which is, look, this is a lot of money and it's only going to be worth it, first of all, if you don't bankrupt yourself. But second of all, if you go into it knowing what you're going to get and willing to play along, and then if you come out of it really feeling exhilarated and feeling like for a few days you could just forget about the real world and your job and whatever and just live in Star Wars and just kind of get those familiar Star Wars feelings of like, oh, I'm going to go trick the bad guy now. Oh, there's Chewbacca. Oh, I'm going to go on this mission and I've got to hide. Like, I don't know, just those little moments of like, you see this happening in Star Wars, you see these characters doing things on the screen, and when you can like sort of grab like a little bit of that, if you're able to forget just for a few minutes that it's fake, I think that is how you'll know that it was worth it. For me, it was worth it because I was saving up, you know, for years to be able to pay for my share of this. And again, I went with two other people. I only paid a third of the cost of this cabin. If you are a family of four and you have, you know, joint finances and your two parents and you're paying for that whole experience yourself, that may not be as worth it for you, especially if your kids are either too young or not Star Wars fans or whatever. This is really the kind of thing that you need to take stock of, like, are you best suited to get your money's worth out of this? So in that way, it's really hard to say if it's worth it for other people, but it was for me.
It sort of seems like you have to bring an earnestness to it.
You do. And the people that I went with, as I said, they're big Disney fans, so they knew what they were getting into, but they were like, we're going to let you take the lead on like jumping in and leaning in, because it's a Disney thing, but it's fundamentally a Star Wars thing. And I was like, that's great. Like, I will be the one to like go up to the characters and like try to sort of wedge my way into like missions and stuff like that. And I'll be the one like cracking jokes with the performers and all that stuff. They were still able to have fun being around me, being invited into things because I solicited those experiences. Like, they were watching it. Obviously, it's not the same if you're not the person at the front of the group having that, like, witty banter or whatever. But they were still, I think, able to have a lot of fun. And certainly that's what they told me, is, like, they were able to enjoy themselves a lot, even if they were not themselves stepping right into the center of the action, because they were there with me and they were able to sort of watch and experience the things that I like opened the door, but then we all walked through that door together.
Do you think an introvert would have like a harder time with that? Because it sort of sounds like you're interacting with the crew members and sort of like wedging your way into these things.
I do think you will miss certain things. I don't know if I want to say a lot of things, because and what I mean by that is, if you are an introvert and you want to see these experiences, you could just walk up to groups that are like leaving the atrium to go do something and you can join them. It's not the kind of thing where like the cast member is like, all right, I need everybody to like tap their wristband on the thing. And if you're not signed up for this experience, you don't get to come along. Like, it's very organic. Like, if you are with other people who are going off to do something, nobody is going to stop you from hanging around in the back of the group and seeing whatever there is to see. But so much of this is this intangible quality of the rush that you get from having that communication, and also from feeling like your actions are affecting how things are playing out. So if you're hanging out in the back, you're going to get a good show, but I don't know that you're going to get more than, you know, 65 or 70% of what this has to offer.
I feel like we do need to get into the kind of less fun question. If you feel comfortable talking about the cost, because it does seem like it was amazing, immersive, and that you definitely got your money's worth, but also, like, it seems pretty expensive.
Oh, it was. And I will level on that. I mean, this was, and you can see, like, if you go online and, like, look at the dates that are available and you call guest services, they will quote you a price for this like 3-day, you know, 2-night experience. And they will, and it depends on when it is in the year, and it depends on how many cabins they have available. I'm sure some of that is flexible, but some of the base prices are listed there. I mean, we got like the standard cabin that's like meant for a family of four. So there's the queen bed, there's two bunk beds, which are actually surprisingly large. I mean, I'm not a tall person, but I was able to fit just fine. They claim that they can fit a person who is 6 feet tall. I'm 5'7", 5'8". Like, I don't know how much extra room a person who's 6 feet tall would have had, but it was fine for me. All this to say, we didn't opt for, like, the special deluxe suite. We got the base cabin, and it was still, let me preface this again by saying this was one of the first few weekends. I am sure this price is going to drop, particularly if they don't see full bookings, which my understanding is that they are seeing some bookings where the cabins are not all full. So this price is probably going to change, particularly in the off season. But for us, it was, I mean, the total price was $7,000. So that's like, you know, for me, again, I'm paying a third of that. If you can't like know several years in advance that you're going to be doing this for sure and start setting aside money, I mean, again, that is cutting a lot of people off from ever being able to experience this. And yes, the price is going to dip, for a combination of lack of demand and, you know, seasonal changes, but it's not going to dip that much. I mean, you're not talking about, you know, $1,000, which I say that as if that's not also prohibitive for a lot of people. But yeah, this is the kind of thing where I would not go again if I had to pay that much. My kind of preference for going again is to get a group of like 6 or 8 people, and not like, you know, some of them being kids who can't pay their way. I'm talking like everybody pays their share, because that's really the only way I could do this again.
So do you think, just from what I've heard from you, I don't really know, you know, what the excursion was like or some of the other activities, but do you think it's mostly targeted to adults who are just like really into Star Wars, or do you think this is kid friendly?
It's definitely kid friendly. They like, again, the actors are so great about playing off of the energy of kids who, I mean, so the kids, so some of the kids really get into it, and it's like you get the sense that this is almost real for them.
That's right.
I mean, it was incredibly wholesome to watch. And some of the kids become like mini celebrities on the trip because there's just enough time for things to happen that earn people a little bit of notoriety. And then you see them in the hallway, or you see them doing an activity the next day or whatever. So like there's just enough time for that where you start to recognize people. And I got to say, some of the funniest like experiences were with the kids. So there were kids who were like really dead set, like they wanted to make Lieutenant Croy's life as miserable as possible. I mean, they weren't like hitting him, but like they would be taunting him and like interrupting him. You know, they were all in for the resistance, right? And like he would be great about just playing off of that because it was all like respectful, and you could tell that the kids were not about to like jump on him and start gouging his eyes out or anything like that. But they wanted to have that moment of sort of defying the bad guy, which is the thing that we've all kind of imagined as we watch Star Wars. Is like, wouldn't it be cool to be the person who stands up and is like, we'll never back down to you or whatever. And I think if you're 10 or 11 or 12, that's got to be intoxicating. And so there was some of that. There was also a group of kids who, for whatever reason, were like, I am team First Order. Like, I am going to go around, do whatever the lieutenant wants me to do. I'm going to, like, spy on the heroes and tell Lieutenant Croy what they're up to. There was anecdote I will tell about this, because a lot of this is, like, if you're not there, the humor of this is kind of lost on you, but there's an event at the end of the first night where Lieutenant Croy has addressed the passengers. He's boarded the ship. He's given his speech, and he's like, he's going to be staying on the ship for the next few days. So he's like, all right, with that done, you know, I shall retire to my room now or whatever. And there's this kind of grumbling, sort of frustrated energy in the atrium because obviously the bad guys are here and this is not good. But this one kid just sort of shouts out from the crowd somewhere, good night, Lieutenant Croy. And it was incredible. And my friends and I were talking about that for the rest of the weekend. It was absolutely wonderful. Because again, that's you add up those little moments that you can't predict where so much of it is driven by the energy of the people who are there with you. And it's more than just like LARPing Star Wars with like a thin veil of, I don't know, the of like fakeness of like, I don't, it feels there's an added realness to it when other people are treating it as real alongside you. That does something to the psychology of it. And so that was just a lot of fun. And yeah, I mean, I saw a ton of kids doing stuff. I guess I'll say one other thing, which is I had seen a group leave the atrium. I was going to go follow them to see what they were up to. And I walked down the stairs, and there is Lieutenant Croy with this group of children around him, just standing in the stairwell. And they're talking to him. They're like, oh, yeah, I saw the resistance was doing this or whatever. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to see like what I can find out here so I can go tell the resistance. So I'm just standing around, very conspicuously just standing right in front of the group. They all stop talking. The kids turn to me. You would think that these were like, oh, well, I'm not, there are some historical analogies that one could draw, but you would think that these were like junior secret police officers, right? Because they give me this withering glare and they're like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, oh, I just, you know, this is my favorite stairwell. I love hanging out in the stairwell. I'm just here to admire the architecture of the stairwell or whatever. And Croy, you know, obviously senses that this is a bit that I'm doing and is like getting into it and like telling me like, you know, you're clearly here just spying on us or whatever. And, you know, eventually just sort of the kids are like, no, you're not up. You're up to no good. You know, you should leave. And Croy, you know, is like, Eric, you know, I say this with all the respect that is due from an officer of the First Order. Get out of here. And like, and they like, they learn your name and stuff like that. So it's not just like, you know, passenger number 7, I'm going to deliver this script to you. It's like, you know, you're having a real conversation with this guy. And I don't know. I think if you aren't going to take those opportunities to like just kind of joke around with folks and like play into the energy that's around you, you miss a lot. It's not to say that you could not have fun or get your money's worth if you don't want to do that stuff. Again, it all depends on how much is it worth to you, right? How much money do you have? How much of your money is this experience going to cost you? If you don't want to jump into it to that degree, I'm not saying you can't get your money's worth, but it certainly makes it harder. And for me, being able, like, having the willingness, because I'm normally a pretty introverted person, but where in a place like this where nobody knows me, like, I was willing to just jump into it. And, like, the actors give back as much as you give. And again, I would say another big determining factor in how well this weekend or this trip goes for you is, who are you there with? How interested are the other passengers? If you're the only one who's jumping in, it's going to be a little bit harder to feel like you're really in Star Wars. If you are, again, having that conversation where those kids are like, they know what's going on and they're playing into it just as much as you are, it's actually really fun. And you know, I think it's hard to, like, kind of imagine how much fun it can be until you're doing it, because you really get sucked into it.
Yeah, it seems like it would be so fun to just be part of that experience. Like, what you're paying for isn't just the looking like you are in a spaceship and eating space food and having that ambiance, but genuinely having that interactive element of it. I think that is what makes it special, and that for me also kind of helps mitigate my skepticism of it, because I admit to feeling a bit torn about the existence of a Star Wars hotel. In our show notes, I get a bit angsty about its existence, and then in parentheses say, or is it just a freaking hotel and it's not that deep? So this is my internal debate, is, you know, is this commodifying Star Wars to the point where it's yet another thing that's becoming inaccessible to people unless you have a certain amount of money? What does this say about the future of the franchise? Is everything becoming increasingly tailored to diehard fans? And does reliance on nostalgia leave less room for innovation in the future? Or is it just a friggin' hotel and it's not that deep and I'm just reading too much into it? So while I personally have those tensions that may be overreading into it, it does help me to know that if you are able to have this experience, that it's not just, you know, you show them the money and then you're there for 2 days in something that kind of looks like a spaceship. It is helpful to me to know that it is a genuinely very immersive experience.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you're not checking into the Star Wars hotel and then going to do other things. Like, the hotel is the experience, in the sense that what you're there for is doing the missions and interacting with the characters, watching the performances, doing that shore excursion to Batuu, where there's other missions that link up to what's happening on the ship. You're not, like, the Star Wars hotel is more than the place that you lay your head at night surrounded by, like, Star Wars themed, like, architecture. You know what I mean? Like, it's not the place that you just leave your bags while you do other things. You're paying for an adventure, which sounds cheesy, but that is what they try to deliver, and I think that is what they're pretty good at delivering. Like, they very much are marketing this as, like, don't call this a hotel, because a hotel implies you drop off your bags and, like, that's where you go to sleep and that's where you wake up, and maybe you have the free continental breakfast, but you're going off to do other things. And this is, like, the thing that you're there for. So I see what you're saying in this idea of, like, are we taking some magic out of Star Wars by, like, having, like, it's the Star Wars hotel? And I think what makes it not that is that it isn't just a hotel. Like, it is the experience that happens inside the hotel that is what you're really paying for. Now, to address your other point, it is absolutely another example of Disney locking a large portion of the fan base out of the experience, both in terms of you have to be to some level a Star Wars fan or a fan of, like, interactive theater. And in terms of, you obviously have to have the money to be able to do this, and a lot of people can't even afford to save up even over the course of years to do this. So it's absolutely something where I have an element of privilege going into this. And people have been talking about, especially in the reviews, saying, like, it is clear that Disney saved up a lot of stuff that it could have done in Galaxy's Edge in terms of immersive entertainment and chose to put it behind this paywall of this uber expensive hotel. There's a lot that they obviously could not do in an open theme park format, especially in terms of the characters getting to know you. But other stuff, you know, the performance by this alien superstar diva singer, you know, at dinner on the first night. I mean, they could have designed Docking Bay 7 to facilitate an alien performer on, you know, regular intervals. I mean, that would have been technically feasible. They chose not to do that. And so they did obviously have a list of things because they were planning. The other thing I should say is they designed and implemented Galaxy's Edge and Star Cruiser side by side. So Star Cruiser just opened, but they built both of those two things together. And that is why the missions that you go on Batu when you are a Star Cruiser guest have a little, like, they have ties back to what is happening on the ship, and you begin to understand why you're going to get the coaxium for Hondo or whatever. So they design these things at the same time, but they clearly chose to keep things as part of this premium experience. And it is, it's kind of, it, you know, you definitely feel conflicted when you're there, because you're like, I know that I'm experiencing something that a lot of people will never be able to experience. And so that does, that colors the whole trip a little bit after you leave, and you're thinking about, like, wow, like, was this a responsible use of money? And so, and I think Disney will have to figure out what they go to next when it comes to immersive storytelling, because all the reviews basically say Disney has set the bar here for how to do interactive storytelling in the future. But if your bar is set at a $7,000 hotel for where the 100 cabins, where everybody is basically not literally locked in, but they are paying to be enclosed within a story, and for the most part within one building, that is not easily translatable to a lot of other formats or to a less expensive experience. And so I don't know that they can convert a lot of that into the parks without losing some of the charm of this being a trip that you're taking with a select group of people. So I don't know what's next for them in terms of how they try to innovate on this, but it's definitely not, it definitely has its issues.
I will say my hope is, if they are going to consider making more of these, is like the Space Camp model of like whole classes of kids can come do field trips or like stay away trips. Like my middle school in, or actually it was elementary school in Florida, like I think it was fourth or fifth graders, like the whole class went to space camp. I think every summer or something like that, there was like a class trip. I didn't go because I wasn't living down there. At that point I went on like an individual thing. But I feel like it would be very cool if they made it accessible in that way that like kids would actually like space camp. I just looked up the prices. I don't know what it was when I went. I know that it was still probably pretty expensive, but it's like $1,200, $1,300 for 6 days, 5 nights, which is very different than 3 days, 2 nights. And that was, it was very like educational, and you got to do like the astronaut training simulations. We got to do a shuttle mission, like stuff that stuck with me. Like it was really fun. And I know I always share, I think it's on like Black Friday or they do like a sale. So I try to share that for parents, but like even that, I wish that were cheaper. And I'm sure they have group rates for like classes of kids, if like, because my school was sending a class of kids. I'm sure it's cheaper. I think theirs was shorter than that, but it would be cool if Disney would consider something like that. Like it's not going to be a moneymaker like a luxury galactic cruise liner or something, but just to give that like option to more people than you're doing with this one.
I mean, would you two go with me to a Star Wars space camp if they built something like that?
Yes.
Yeah.
I would go absolutely to space camp, the original space camp right now. Like, it's very fun. I highly recommend space camp.
I regret not going when I was the perfect age for that, because that's the thing. You can't go to space camp as a 30-year-old. It's just, it
you
doesn't.
You can be a camp counselor, though. For the record, you could. I was looking up the other day, not the other day, like 2 years ago. I was like, man, maybe I need to be a space camp counselor one summer. It was fun. It was very fun.
Eric, when you were saying that the only way you'd go again would be like with a group of 6 or 8 friends, I was thinking, you know, could I be one of those friends? Because I'd go
I mean, yes, obviously, Grace, do you have a credit card?
I do indeed, yes.
All right. Congratulations, you're in.
Heck yeah.
I think that the best way to do this, if you're someone our age, is you get 6 or 8 people,
Eric, there is adult space camp.
Oh my
God. For 2 days. And it's $300, which is different than the Star Wars expense.
So are we going? I think the lesson here is that we're going.
We should. Yeah. It's sold out for this year, but maybe
camp.
Next summer.
Okay.
Yeah, let's
Excellent.
Go to space camp.
So we're going to do that. Yeah, I think the best way to experience this, if you're our age, is you get a large group, basically as large as you can fit in, like, whatever suite, like, has enough beds, essentially. You basically make it like as economical as possible, and they should all be people like us who are like, to some degree, we are ready and willing to lean in, right? I mean, you don't have to be the most extroverted person, but you have to have some desire to lean into like a Star Wars story. I think like the worst way to do it is like you drag along a spouse who just has no interest in any of this, right? And that's not only not fun for them, but it's also you're not getting your money's worth because only one person is really having the experience that you're paying for. So, yeah, I think this is all leading up to in fact, it could be a podcast miniseries where, like, we audition people to see if they're good enough to come with us.
Did y'all ever watch – okay, this is not the same thing, but did you ever watch Next Food Network Star?
No.
Can't say that I did.
Oh, you missed out. It was, like, cooking challenges and, like – public speaking challenges. We should do that.
That's what I'm saying is we get
pigs.
People to like, okay, like deliver your best defense of like Emperor Palpatine's consolidation of power under the New Order, right? Or like, or like, you know, show me your best like new design for a clone trooper, you know, like what's like an like, you know, they got like the lava troopers and like the water troopers or whatever. Like we got to test their Star Wars creativity because that's what we want to see on display at the Star Cruiser is how can they improvise as part of the Star Wars universe. I'm telling you, I think we could make this into a great miniseries here. And if we were allowed to have sponsors, I don't know, maybe we could even pay our way.
So basically, people need to start preparing for this eventuality. They need to start coming up with arguments for why they should be the next Hoth Takes star go with us on wacky adventures.
Oh, and that's the thing is we'll record a podcast while we're there. So if you win, you don't just get to go to Star Cruiser with us. You get to be a Hoth Takes co-host, basically, for an episode. You get to be a guest co-host. This would be fun if it weren't like thousands of dollars that we would have to figure out. But yeah, I mean, it's gonna be
adult space camp.
we'll end up doing adult space camp instead of Star Cruiser. But someday Disney's gonna drop these prices, and then all bets are off, baby.
We'll be waiting.
While we are getting ready for Disney to drop those prices, in the meantime, thank you so much for listening. If you want to share your thoughts about this episode or suggest topics for future shows, you can email us at hothtakes@gmail.com or find us on Twitter at hothtakes. I'm at Grace_Seegers on Twitter, Eric is at Eric Geller, and Haley is at Burdenator. Haley made our incredible logo and banner art, and Eric edited the show and put together our music, although for legal purposes, we should note that all Star Wars themes and sound effects are the intellectual property of Lucasfilm. You can find a complete archive of past episodes on our website, hottakes.wordpress.com. And if you like the show, share it with a friend, perhaps someone that you would even someday take to Star Wars Hotel. You can find Hoth Takes on all the major podcasting platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. We'll see you next time. May the Force be with you.